let's just open in prayer, and we'll I'll get to the workshop here. Dear Father, we thank you. I just feel like that you're in the midst of us here today. The conversations I heard around the table, as we as I walked through the cafeterias and the little nooks where the guys were sitting, it was all about you, Lord, and what they had learned in the first message and workshop. And that's just delightful. It's delightful to me, so I can't imagine what it's to you. So, Father, I just ask that you continue to bless this day, and absolutely, most of all, take each one of these people home safely to their families, and just let them have safe travels as they're headed out when this is over. Father, I just would ask that you would be here at our workshop, and just give me your words in Jesus' name. Well, I had the opportunity, I guess it's been about 2 months ago now, to go to a four-day workshop out at Glen Eyrie in Colorado Springs that the Navigators put on, and it was called a Shepherding Conference. And what we're finding with people in general, it doesn't matter if it's ministry people, people that are next door, just people in general are hurting. And no one's able to hear them because their worlds are so busy and they're at such a fast pace that we just can't get involved. We don't have time to get involved. You know, it's like one more thing on that to-do list, and our to-do list is already undoable, you know. And so they have started this shepherding training session that's going to happen 3 times a year for some of the NAV staff people, and we will just be trained specifically in hearing people and listening, being safe people, just being there for people when they need to talk. And their dream is at some point to be able to have a network of us shepherds around that when staff people or people that are in the ministry are hurting, then they'll have our phone numbers and they can call. They can come and get a weekend with us if they'd like. We can go down to them and get a weekend with them. So that's kind of the big picture and what we're dreaming for, because people just have a real hard time finding people that care and that will help them through hard times in their life. So one of the sections that we had, that I just really was challenged on was, are you a safe person? And that's being a safe person, and that's what your handout is all about. The two verses that they used, and both of these verses are out of the message, and Ephesians 5, 1 through 2 says, watch what God does, and then you do it, like children who learn proper behavior from their parents. Mostly what God does is love you. Keep company with him and learn a life of love. Observe how Christ loved us. His love was not cautious but extravagant. He didn't love in order to get something from us, but to give everything of himself to us. Love like that. Just the things, as you look at that verse, he didn't skimp. It was extravagantly, and he wasn't cautious. He didn't care about getting into the messies. You know, I think of the woman at the well, and her life was messy. It was just a messy life. And he just, very gently, but he just tromped right into that life. You know, he didn't shun her like he should have shunned her, because culturally he should have shunned her. She was a Samaritan, you know, and he was not afraid to just get into the trenches. And so that was a thing that just really spoke to me. And then Philippians 1, 9 through 11, also in the message, says, so this is my prayer, that you love, your love will flourish, and that you will not only love much, but well. Learn to love appropriately. You need to use your head and test your feelings so that your love is sincere and intelligent, not sentimental gush. Love a lover's life, circumspect and exemplary, a life Jesus will be proud of, bountiful in fruit from the soul, making Jesus Christ attractive to all, getting everyone involved in the glory and the praise of God. Again, that verse is just packed. You know, when it comes to the message, it's like, oh. And so one of the things that I just wanted to throw around the table is, to you, who is a safe person in your life? And you don't have to name names if you don't want to. Just think, just get in your head who that safe person is in your life. And as you're thinking about that, it could be someone whom you feel free to share your thoughts, your feelings, your desires, your struggles, without carefully editing it. As how many times do we carefully have to edit things? Because somebody's going to turn their nose up, or they're going to gasp at what you say, you know. So I really hope and just pray that each of you have that safe person, because it's essential in your life. And then as you're thinking about that safe person, what do you experience in your relationship with them that frees you to be authentic and vulnerable? And that we are going to discuss. What are some of the things that you... Good point. What else? What do you look for? That's a biggie. You kind of watch them to make sure that they're not talking about everybody behind their backs and sharing things that they shouldn't be sharing, and you know that they can keep a confidence tightly. Yep. That's a big one. And I think that working with college girls, I've done a few college girls' Bible studies. And some of the things they share, it's all I can do not to gasp. You know, but I know if I gasp or if I show any kind of, you know, I've lost them. You know, because that just doesn't, just doesn't work. Anything else? What are the characteristics? And that we talked about a few of the characteristics of a safe person. Can you think of more? If you can't, I have a very long list.
Well, I don't know if it goes with two or three. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I value in somebody that I'm talking to is that I know that they have a working knowledge of the Word. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's, you know, I don't want it to just be all Gary Smalley or whatever. You know, mm-hmm.
We found with our sons, if something came up in their life that they were really struggling with, if we could give them a verse, you know, they didn't care what Dobson said, and they didn't care what Gary Smalley said, and they really didn't care what Mom and Dad said, you know. But if we could give them a Bible verse, they really couldn't argue with God. And so I valiantly watched for posters in Christian bookstores of verses that we were using in the boys' lives. and we would have them on their bedroom walls, you know, because those verses were something that they could hang on to tight that wouldn't change. Any other safe things that you think about? Well, some of them that they shared at our conference, she had quite a long list. And one, there was three A's, and it was authentic, affirming, and accepting. She said that those were the top things that she looked in for a safe person was they were authentic, affirming, and accepting. And then we talked about not threatening or not judgmental. Vulnerable, but not full of themselves. You know, that they needed to be vulnerable, but she said that if you're too full of yourself and you feel like you have all the answers, you're not a safe person to them because they think, well, she's too put together for me to share my stuff with. You know, availability is another big one. You have to be available. You also have to be willing to help them process through things. And that's not giving them answers because lots of times our answers aren't what God wants them to have anyway. You know, and so it's to help them process and figure out what their answers, you know, what their answers are from God, not your pat answers. You also need to be a thoughtful listener. And don't be afraid of silence. When you're talking and meeting with someone, throw a question out there, but don't be afraid of silence because they might just need to process. They just might need to think about it. And if the silence goes on for a long time, go to another question because they're not going to answer it and you don't want to probe. They'll answer it when the time comes, you know, when they're ready. Also have some questions, and I have some questions, if we can get that far, that will help also in doing it. Taking the initiative. If you see someone hurting, sometimes they will not take the initiative to approach you because they're so broken and they're so hurting. So you take the initiative and say, could we go out for a cup of hot tea? You know, or could we... you know, could we meet for lunch or could we go walk around the park? You know, if she's a walker, if you know what she likes to do, you know, just you make the first approach. And then a safe person is a person that doesn't shame you when you share your baggage. And so one of the comments that just was just a huge thing for me was think of it as a gift when someone shares with you. Allow them to be vulnerable and transparent with you without showing any shock. And that's something that I use a lot of facial expressions. And so I have to really, I don't play cards well because my sons read my face, you know, and they know if I'm bluffing or not. And so it's just kind of like I have to hold my cards like this because they just read my face. And so it's so that was something that I thought was interesting. And then the person that's sharing with you, do they feel like God is a safe person to go to? And that was a really big thing as you're ministering to a person and the more that you get to know them, some people don't think God is safe. And I have a sister that does not think God is safe. My sister feels like, and she would tell you, I'm not sharing any confidences here, she feels like that God, she has done so many wrong things in her life that there is no way God could even want to be around her. You know, and I can share with her that that's God's business, is being around broken people and people that have done wrong things, and there's not any of us that have done wrong things, but that's a huge issue, is because there's a lot of people that don't. When I was in the Baltics on missions trips, I was able to go on to Baltics 3 times for missions trips, and one of my things was to do lay counseling while I was there, and then also to teach Bible studies. And I found out very quickly that the Baltic women did not think of God as a father. They did not like putting father and God together because they had all come from such abusive backgrounds by their fathers that if God is like their fathers, they don't want anything to do with him. And so I learned very quickly that I never used the word father. I always either used God, you know, or the great I am. They'll say the great I am, or they'll say God, but they don't use father in Baltics because it just is too bad a connotation for them to think about. So just kind of know where the person is that you're talking with, is where they're coming from. And then, let's see. Some of the other things that you might look, if you're looking for a safe person, you might look for someone that does have the same spiritual beliefs that you do, because that can be a real cement for the relationship, as if you have the same spiritual beliefs. Also, probably not a safe person if you see them treating somebody else harshly, you know, because they might be nice to you, but then the harshness might come out, because if it comes out to one person, it's probably going to eventually come out to you. They might be on good behavior for a while, but it'll pop up because that's there. Another thing, you want to really make sure that you don't always have to have the last word when you're talking with someone, because that can make them feel really uncomfortable. Just make sure that you don't have to comment on everything they comment on. And then they really like people that will share the stuff that's in their lives. So if you never share what's in your life, then they're not going to open up to you. They like it that you share some of your stuff, because then that makes you feel more human. They are able to relate to you better. 4, what are clues to you that a person's not a safe person? Mm-hmm. Yep. That's a biggie.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Definitely. Because you're going to probably get worldly. You know, you're going to probably get, yeah, you're not. They're going to give you the worldly equations, not the spiritual equations. And so, yep, definitely. What else? One of the things that they shared was beware of throwing cold water on what somebody says. Don't try to make little of what they are telling you, you know, if they're, because to them, it's probably huge. And if you say, oh, it's not really that bad, instantly you've invalidated them. You know, just by making that comment, oh, it's not that bad, in their life and in their mind, it is that bad. And it's probably bigger than what they're even sharing with you in their minds. And so the minute you say, oh, it's not that hard, or it's not that bad, or you'll get through it, you know, you can say you'll get through it, but choose the right timing to say you're going to get through it, because if they're right in the midst of it, they're going to think they're never going to get through it, you know. And also, beware of being a fixer, and that is my, that had my gold star on it, because I had it in huge letters, because I am a fixer, and I don't want anyone around me hurting, and I don't want anyone sad or unhappy, and I want everything very harmonious, and so I want to fix it instantly so that you're back to being happy and everything's just fine. And that's not good when you're working with people, because it just it ends up making them feel more broken. And so that was my thing that I really got out of the workshop that I needed to work on big time, was I don't have to fix everything. It's okay for people to be sad sometimes. On to question five, it says, how do you find a safe person? And I want to have some conversation on this one. How do you find that safe person? Lots of heads shaking here.
Probably I would start at church rather than at work.
Okay.
That's what I would do. I think sometimes it just happens. If I think about one for me, it just happens. You know, it's someone with similar. Similar ideas, similar, kind of similar life situation. Just, you know, but it just happened. It wasn't looking for a safe person, but she just does happen to be one.
Yep.
So became a friend, and then it's like you get to know them, and you know they share the same faith, and, and you have lots in common.
Definitely.
It makes me think about this situation I was in a few years ago. I met this gal. We were total strangers. Never within 20 minutes, we were like, we've known each other forever. And we had a lot of things. She only she had six children. I only had two. That was a big difference. But we were the same age, and she'd lost her husband, and blah, blah, blah. It was like we just came like this. We were tighter than sisters, and she had three sisters, and I had three sisters, and we didn't get along with them. So we had so much in common. And anyway, she lived in Branson, and I lived in Fremont, and that road was hot with my car. I was always, we were either there, I was either there, or we were on the phone. We talked for 2 hours on the phone. Just unreal how much comfort we could do for each other. She was a great girl, and she got breast cancer and lost her. So anyway, we were best of friends for quite a long time, but the distance didn't make any difference. It was just easy to be there in a few hours, or she could my house, and it was funny how we met. Just like you said, it just happened. You know, I mean, I was in Branson and walked in to buy a ticket. She worked in a theater, and she was standing there, and nobody was in the theater. I walked in, and we just became friends. It was. That's exactly what we both said. We were like total strangers. Became
They're far and few between, it seems. But when you have one, it's just, it is a treasure, special gift. How many of you find safe people in your families?
Are you talking about children? Are you talking about siblings?
It can be siblings. It can be parents. It can be sisters. You know, it can be your children.
I think I have more than one.
Good. Because nowadays, the ratio that they quoted out there of having a safe person that you can share in your family was over 65% of people do not have a safe person in their families that they can share with. And they say it's going to get worse as the families even get farther apart, that they just will not have that safe nucleus that they're used to having. And that was frightening for me, because it's like, I just, that was a frightening one for me, because I'm going, if your family can't be safe, that's really sad. So.
A lot of times if your family, it's like what you talked about, shared experience, mm-hmm. sometimes are safe people for you.
Yep.
The way they can relate. Mm-hmm. And I know from my personal experience, my family members have not had type of experiences that I have in my life, so it's not really safe to talk to them about mm-hmm.
Makes things a lot more complex.
But I don't think that your safe person has to have had the same experiences that you've had. You know what I mean? Like the breaking experiences, the experiences that just broke you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't think that person has to have been through that same thing.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I don't think it's exclusive, but I'm just saying mm-hmm. that. That's true, because, you know, let's just say that I've had a divorce and you haven't. There's no reason for me to even consider you and I'm trying to understand what I'm talking about if you haven't been through it. But if you both have been through the same thing, oh yeah, I remember that. I know how you feel, blah, blah. And it's always better if you can find somebody that's been through somewhat the same thing.
But you can still talk to someone who hasn't been through that experience, and they can possibly help you, just in that there's someone that you can talk to about it, and you know it's not going any further. And it just allows you to
verbalize it.
Exactly.
You don't carry it around.
Exactly.
Processing. That processing word there.
Well, I've got it. Uh-huh. So it looked like marriage between the two of them. She and I became best friends just instantly, because, like you said, it's not that we really could relate to anything in our lives, but we just spiritually and everything, it just clicked, and definitely God's work in it. So when he broke up with her, I was devastated.
I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. Another person's gain. Because who knows what God had in all of that. Maybe it was for her and me.
Mm-hmm.
Because,
to me,
I mean, I've never had a friend that is that spiritual. Never so much on the same page that way. And she's been divorced for 20 years. So as far as relating, you know, you said that, you know, we can really talk about a lot of those issues. And I think we can manage. But
mm-hmm. I think that brings up another trait for a safe person, and that is someone who can empathize.
Mm-hmm.
They maybe haven't been through it, but they can empathize with you for that.
Definitely. Some of the question six is, how do you become a safe person? And we skip down to the section that says the qualities of a safe person. And I'm just going to go over the main qualities. And then if you want to discuss on any of them, we can. But number one is a person with humility. And just that you're aware that you have sin in your life and that you are a needy person also. That's the number one there on A. Number two is accepting and not judgmental. We talked about that a little bit, and it gives some things of, I've been really reading a lot on grace, being a dispenser of grace. And I have, in my mind, I have made it into every time I go pump the soap in my bathroom to wash, I use my piano students give me tons of bath and body things. They keep me well supplied. And so as I'm pumping my bath and body soap onto my hands and washing them and I smell that, I just instantly think, okay, Linda, you need to be a dispenser of grace. That's the dispenser of soap. You can be a dispenser of grace. And I just think of, you know, when I am around people that they pump me and then I can dispense grace to them. Because we really live in a graceless world. People do not give people breaks. They just, it's just a common fact. And so when they're around a person that's dispensing grace to them, that's going to be an aha moment for them. And they're going to want to know what's different about that person. They're not treating me like the rest of the world. And if they don't know the Lord, that gives you a great opportunity to step in and share the Lord with them. Or if they do know the Lord and just are in kind of a hard area of their life or they're just needing a friend, then you can also step into that position. But that was one that I was really wanted to work on as I came home, was being a dispenser of grace. Three is willing to go slower. Slow rather than try to fix them or be the savior. That one was, these two were both starred for me. Four, able to enter their pain rather than give answers. Five is to be respectful as they're sharing with you. And you can read through this later because we're just I'm kind of having to give you the condensed version here. Six, do not be shocked by what they're saying. And it says live is costly. It's supposed to be life is costly. So you can make an F out of that V if you'd like. Seven, a balance of grace and truth. Don't be afraid to bring some scripture into it. Eight, a vision for what can be. People need to have hope. Every time I watch the news on the television, I see absolutely no hope. And I have gotten to the point that I was really getting depressed. And I was just feeling so blue, and I just don't normally feel blue. And I thought, okay, Lord, what is causing this? You know, what is causing me to feel so blue? And it was just like he bonged me up against my head, and he goes, Linda, you can't watch so much news. And so I watch the news now every 3 days. I figured that I'll catch up on stuff, you know, and they always do on the radio because the radio doesn't give a whole lot of news. So I listen to music, and if there's something huge that happens, the radio breaks in and tells me it's happening. So I've kind of started listening to music more than the news, and then I just kind of watch the news for weather issues and every 3 days because I can't take it any more than that because it makes me hopeless. I see it, and everything in it is so hopeless. And I want to be a hopeful person, and I want to be a person that can fill people with hope. And then number nine, personally living in authenticity, vulnerability, and in tune with the struggles of our own hearts. Just be transparent. People don't want people that they can't see into. And, I mean, you don't have to hang out every bit of your dirty linen every time you see somebody. But be transparent. You know, don't make them think that you're a perfect parent and you never had any issues with your three sons. Because you know what? They'd know that I'm a perfect liar. You know, they would just know it. You know, there's no way you can raise three sons and have everything go perfectly. So they're just not going to see you very realistic. And number 10, bring a sense of peace to the relationship. Out of a book, True Face by Lynch and Thrall. And it says, God's final objective for us is not resolving sin or getting well. God's ultimate goal is maturing us into what he says we are, and then releasing us into the dreams he's destined for us before the world began. God carefully designed his influence system so that we would have to influence to more out of who we are than what we do. Therefore, God's influence system requires personal maturity. And one of the things that, as I was reading that quote, is that one of the things that I spent years in Bible study fellowship, and one of the things that they just told us time and time again as children's leaders in the children's program was, it's not what you say, it's what you model. You know, you can say nice words, you can smile, you can think you've got it all together, but what you're modeling is what's going to stick with people. And an illustration that I have with that is that our sons would always have to come in and wake us up when they had curfews. We had curfews set for them, and problem was that they were supposed to come wake us up when they came in for curfews, and if they didn't, then they were grounded. Because that just was, you know, we figured out that they were probably late if they didn't come and wake us. Well, the thing is that Steve could fall asleep. He, you know, no big deal. I could never fall asleep until those boys were underneath the roof. And so I would just sit in the side of the bed beside Steve, because he can sleep with the light on, having my quiet time, because I have my quiet time at night before I go to bed instead of in the morning. And the boys would just always make fun of me when they'd come in. They'd say, yeah, Mom's having her quiet time. You know, we're in, you know. And I said, okay, night. And so one of the things that all three of them have commented on after they're grown, they have their wives, they have their families, is that there was a sense of security for them to know that when they came in every night that I was sitting there having my quiet time. And even though they razzed me about it as they were growing up, and, you know, they'd always comment about it. Yeah, Mom has to wake up for us, and she always reads her Bible while she's waiting up for us, you know. And I thought, little did you know that it's not just reading the Bible. I'm praying for you dudes, too, you know, because I don't trust you dudes, you know. And so, but what you model, they might. You might not think it's catching at that point, and what you're modeling with your friends around you or your family or whoever your nucleus is, it's catching. They see it, and it's being absorbed. It may not come out right then at that second. It may come out 20 years later, you know, when they're saying, why is my child screaming? I'm not going to touch that one with a 10-foot pole, you know, and then all of a sudden she'll say, oh, I'm a screamer. Okay. You know, I didn't have to say a word. I just was quiet, and it was kind of like just kind of my quietness helped her process. And it's like, oh, my kids scream because I'm a screamer. You know, and she came to it by herself. And so it's just kind of it's fun working with people. I love working with people. I love being with people. And so I would just encourage you as a closing, one of the things that I didn't put on the handout, and you're welcome to look at my handout sheet here, is they say there's additional roadblocks to being a safe person, and then there also was, I think that was the other thing, was the additional roadblocks, because it was in another conference brochure that I had was the questions that you can use to initiate people to be in safe conversations with you. And also another thing, in just closing, your body language is a huge thing. And we hadn't talked about body language at all, but your body language is a huge thing with whether you're approachable or not. Because if you're sitting there like this, kind of back, it's like, okay, don't think so. Yeah, you know, it's like, judge, jury, you're doomed. You know, but if you're setting up and you're smiling, you're looking, you're engaging, you know, you're not looking at your watch every 10 seconds thinking, okay, this is taking way too long. You know, I need to be to my next appointment or my next piano student's coming in 20 minutes, you know, and but just your whole countenance, they can read you and they can tell you if you're genuinely wanting to spend time with them and wanting to be around them. You know, one of my favorite things with my grandson is that if he doesn't think I'm giving him enough attention, he'll go, Nana.
And I have these two little hands on my cheeks. Are you listening to me? It's like, Hudson, I can listen to you and do three other things at the same time. But to him, he needed my undivided attention. So I get these two little hands on my face. Nana, are you listening to me?
And so I think that sometimes when I'm being with people, I think of that illustration. Nana, am I listening to you? You know, so because everybody wants to be listened to, and they want to be appreciated. Mm-hmm. Engaged, definitely. So. We have 5 minutes, ladies, before we have to go put out snacks for our last time. Comments?
What do you do when you feel like somebody is just kind of stuck in the same rut and you've been over that pathway many times? And I know you're not supposed to fix it. Mm-hmm.
If it goes on for a long time, if it's a continual habitual thing where you go and you always get caught in the same rut, eventually I'll say, you know, I really don't think that we're going to come to a conclusion on this right now, and that maybe God's not ready to give us a conclusion on it right now. So maybe we just need to put it aside and move on to what else we need to move on to. You know, and I'm not making light of it. I said I'm going to write it down here. We're going to revisit it, you know, because I don't want him to think that I'm making light of it and we're not going to go back to it, because I make a note of it. But it's like, let's move on to another thing. And quite often when we get to another, the second or the third or the fourth, and then I'll come back and I'll say, you know, this question, this area we were talking about, oh, it's no big deal now. You know, because you've got them over that rut, and then the rut isn't quite so deep when you go back from going through the other things. If you can.
Does this person keep calling you and wanting just to stop you? Just somebody to just talk? Well, I was just thinking a few years ago there were a couple of women who came to the church and
Talking about, because I've been in unhealthy or dysfunctional work studies also where I had to get out.
Yeah, sometimes you do have to just get out. You have to pull the plug, and you try to do it as gently and aggressively as you can do it. But it's like, you know, my husband would say, being the prophet he is, he says, why are you sticking with them so long? And it's like, because I said, I'll know when I need to stop. It's like he just can't. He says, I would have done it 6 months ago or 9 months ago. And so, but yeah, there are times when you do have to pull the plug, and those are hard times, but they do come. And one other thing is that be careful about how many people you get around you, because you need a good ratio of healthy versus unhealthy people. Because I really have to be very careful that I don't have that balance, because I have a tendency to pick up unhealthy people. And then I get so overwhelmed and so sucked dry that I'm not good to anybody, you know, much less my poor husband. He's going, how many women are you working with right now? And it's like, probably too many. You know, I don't even want to tell him how many. So it's like, that's another thing you have to be careful of. It's just make a healthy ratio there. So, well, I hope this has been helpful. And I was just really excited. The other one that I almost did was, where is it? It was on on listening, and on it just had a whole aspect of are you a good listener? You know, it was a safe person, and then the next breakout session we had are you a good listener? And so that one was good too. So I was going vice versa. I couldn't figure out which one I was going to do. So this one went out. You can leave everything here, and because this is our room, and then you can just pick it up when you're ready to head home.